Welcome to the Employee Advocacy and Influence Podcast. My name is Lewis Gray, and I'm joined today by my co-host with the most, Disseminate CEO, Bradley Keenan.
Did you prepare that?
I didn't, but pre-recording, you joked about the fact that you had something on me that you might bring up. So I was just trying to get something in there ahead of time.
So I remember when I was a kid and I had to wear a blazer to school.
Oh, here we go. Right?
And for our American audience, they'll love this because, imagine an English school. This was a nasty school, but we did have blazers. And if I forgot my blazer, I was sent home to go get it. Right. So I realized that when I was like 13. So every day I left my blazer at home because it meant that, and I lived miles away. I had to get on a bus. Right. So this bus journey was easily 30 minutes each way. So forget the blazer. You got an hour off school plus dossing around in your house for another half hour. It was an hour and a half off school a day if you forgot your blazer. That's a reward. Do you know where I'm going with this, Lewis?
I do. Yeah. I'm contemplating just jumping off before you get to the punchline.
So Lewis forgot his head. Lewis is recording from home today, but he left his headphones in the office. So he traveled into London to go and get his headphones to come back home. So he was messaging me on Slack. He's like, I'll be back in a minute. You were 13-year-old me with a blazer.
That's brilliant. I didn't know where you were going with that. I thought it was going to be something to do with the rugby shirt that I'm wearing.
It's like no, it wasn't. It was you forgetting your headphones and then traveling into London again on disseminated expenses to go and get a pair of headphones to come home. I hope you're working on the train.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Do you know what? I saw a few people sharing certificates for the course. I was doing my LinkedIn community engagement or community management, I should say. But I fully thought when I heard blazer, it's usually whenever Brad and I meet up in person, there's usually something about what I'm wearing that will.
You can't say that because people think I'm like punching down or I'll get some complaint. It's all in jest.
But the pro of that is people, if they're listening on Spotify, might now jump onto YouTube and be like, let me see what he's talking about. And then our Spotify numbers go up and the YouTube numbers. But now that I've said it, people might not do that, so forget about it. But cool. All right, bullying session completed. We've got quite an interesting episode lined up today. I would say, not to say that others aren't, but I'm quite excited about this one because somebody asked quite an important question in a group that we set up recently, which I'll get into in a bit more detail in a moment. But we're basically going to be covering that. And debunking it, essentially. Let's get into it. Okay, so what I was trying to tee up there without giving away too much information is the fact that we launched the course fairly recently. So you will know this if you listen to our last episode or if you follow any of us on LinkedIn. But if you haven't seen, we recently launched the Employee Advocacy Certification, which is a free course on employee advocacy covering everything from the benefits to employee training and managing a successful program and so much in between. The course is just value packed with additional content too. So you've got everything from exclusive reading to case studies, and you even get a free copy of Bradley Keenan's book. I don't know why I said your last name there, Bradley, but Brad's book, Employee Advocacy, 101 Cheat Codes.
As opposed to Bradley Cooper's autobiography.
As opposed to Bradley Cooper's autobiography. It just feels weird because
Bradley Keenan's employee advocacy book, very clear.
Bradley Keenan's employee advocacy, 101 cheat codes. But yeah, you get a free copy of that when you sign up. So that combined with the course is essentially your one-way ticket to employee advocacy success. But the reason I mention it is because when we launched the course to our initial early access group, we also launched the alumni network for the course on LinkedIn, and the purpose of that group was initially for people taking the course to be able to ask Brad questions directly. So Brad was jumping into the group once a day and just answering questions that people had around the course, But what quickly happened is people started sharing their employee advocacy experiences and asking important questions around the topic, which is arguably more beneficial. I think it's nice to kind of have this community. It grew to over 100 members just in the early access stage alone. But one that we got asked today is basically why we're recording this episode. So I'm not going to name the person just because we haven't had a chance to run this by them yet. But essentially the question that they asked, or the point that they raised, is employees often engage with each other's replicated company content through likes or comments to enhance impressions and reach. However, this internal interaction creates noise in the data, making it challenging to measure the impact. The main concern here is the potential false inflation of engagement, not to mention the loss of accurate earned media value and ROI. And the question they asked is just about a disseminate feature and whether or not we can filter out this internal data. So Bradley did answer this question in the group, but I thought it would just be worth us discussing because Brad and I had a quick call about it earlier to discuss it as a podcast episode. And while we both agreed that it can inflate the social figures, we disagreed that it's a bad thing overall. So there's a few things to cover, but Brad answered the question so well, and I don't want to take credit for all of this. So Brad, I'm going to hand over to you and I'll let you tackle this one.
Yeah, I guess the challenge is when we talk about inflating numbers, advertising overall is always inflated. It's how you account for it afterwards. Because if you didn't do that, you would assume that if I have 1 million impressions on LinkedIn, every single one of those 1 million people is someone who wants to buy or can buy whatever product or service I sell. If I have, let's take a corporate channel as an example. So a lot of people who work for a company follow the company that they work for on LinkedIn. Not as a strategy to grow followers, but just because they work for that organization. And not everybody works for an organization for their entire life, which means that even in that situation of organic posting on your corporate channel and seeing impressions, that's inflated in the sense of, you know, somebody could just be scrolling through LinkedIn, see something that one of their coworkers is working on and say, that's interesting. Now, is that inflated numbers? You could argue it is. But if that person then goes on to engage with that content becomes visible to their audience. And in their audience, maybe somebody who can purchase whatever product or service that company does. So I think it's almost loaded in the sense of saying overinflating impression data, because to me impression data is it's giving you an indication of what might happen as you get further down the funnel is where you get more accurate information. So where we look at employees engaging with posts, it's typically about 30% of the engagement comes from employees. Now, as a program leader, I may choose, if I want to be super analytical and almost cynical about my data, I may actually take 30% off of my engagement to get to a number that may be more realistic. But my argument to an extent is, where do you stop with that? Because I get served ads from our competitors all the time. And the reason I get served ads is because I engage with employee advocacy content. So somewhere on the internet, there's intent signals that say that Disseminate's looking at buying an employee advocacy program, when clearly we're not. So the impression data is just that. It's an indication of where something may go. So we built a feature a couple of years ago now called Boost Post. And essentially the idea of that was that we think about employee advocacy being people that are people who participate in an employee advocacy program. This is a simplification, but maybe being a little bit more extroverted in the sense that they are happy shouting from the rooftops about all the great things that their company's doing and what they're doing. So we built this feature called Boost Post. And the idea of that was to lean into people who are more introverted that may not want to post on their LinkedIn page and say, you know, this is something that's going on in my organization, but may like or reshare something that has already happened because it's more of a passive experience. So just our company alone, so as an example, last year we did just under 9 million impressions that came from Boost Post with our team, and we're a small organization. Now, we don't have 9 million employees, so we know that those impressions, those reshares and engagements created further impressions. And in honesty, we hope that in that 9 million, there's someone who's interested in the topic of employee advocacy. So yes, massively overinflated if we talk about impressions, because we did overinflate them, but the impact of those overinflated impressions is really what matters. Does that make sense? That was a bit of a ramble, so I apologize for that one.
No, no, it makes total sense. I think when you consider the cost of that activity as well, it kind of opens your eyes to it. So you mentioned Boost Post as a feature. Don't want to go into the disseminate capabilities too much, but it is just a bolt-on of your employee advocacy program. So it's not employee sharing, like you said. It's employees supporting content from either your company, or it could be select individuals. Like, for example, if Brad, if you posted today, we might boost that post within the platform because we want people to go and engage with that so that it gets shown to more people. But the exact number, so this is my fault, Brad, because I told you it was nearer 9 million. I think I was inflating our own numbers there. It was 8,674,522 impressions.
Lewis, I work in sales. That's nearly 9 million.
That is nearly
rounded
9 million.
Rounded up to the nearest million, that is nearly 9 million.
The only reason I mention it is because I don't want people calling me out for my maths or math for our friends across the Atlantic. Because I was going to talk about the cost per impressions, basically. So WebFX released some data on the average cost per 1,000 impressions for 2023 on LinkedIn, and it was between $5 and $8. So that was the range. But even if you work with a more conservative average and go with the lower end of that scale of $5 per 1,000 impressions, to generate the impressions that we did just through the Boost Post feature would have cost nearly nearly $4,500. And we're only, I think we've just under 30 people within our program. Mm-hmm. So that's disseminate employees. Now, if you're a enterprise organization with thousands, tens or hundreds of thousands of employees, you can quickly see how rapidly that number is going to increase and the impact that's going to have.
Yeah, and it's also, this comes into, I mean, other episodes where we've spoken about the ideal advocate profile, but to me, this is why that's so important, because who that person's connected to and who your thesis would be that their audience would include is why it's so important to get that right. So if my objective is sales and I want to connect with, you know, our target buyers, then my ideal advocate is somebody who works in a commercial or a sales role. If I'm trying to connect with buyers and I start onboarding people who work in my finance team, the probability that someone in finance is connected to buyers of our product is, it's possible, but it's not probable. But with sales, it is probable. So tapping into the right audience, so those impressions, while they might be quote unquote overinflated, far more likely to resonate with your audience if the right people are engaging and sharing that content.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so important. And again, we'll link to that episode because I think that was one of the most popular episodes that we've done, if I could catch my words. We'll link to that one in the show notes because that's an important piece of information, I think, for anybody managing an employee advocacy program. But just something I wanted to touch on, I guess just to finalize that, you have to see it from the perspective of more likes means better reach, which means more eyes and better impact overall. And Brad mentioned the averages earlier of the percentage of interaction that comes from coworkers. Disseminate actually released a report on this. We did a study a few years back. I think it was at the beginning of last year, where we analyzed over 1,000 LinkedIn posts and just looked at the percentage of interactions that came from coworkers. And it was 37.02%, 37%. But if you want to work with averages, like Brad said, you can just factor that in. So we're not going to completely say that we disagree with what this person said in the group. We'll say if you are being pressured to increase impressions and things like that, then or, you know, interactions or engagements on social, then you can use that data to, I guess, get your average percent of interaction that came from external sources. And again, we'll link to that in the show notes so that you can digest that in your own time.
Yeah, like you said, it depends on your objective. So if you were in an internal communications team and you were using employee advocacy to spread news internally, then there wouldn't be an overinflation. That would be the goal. You would be saying, actually, it's the opposite. We've had that, you know, nearly 40% of our employees, 40% of the engagement is coming from employees. That's fantastic. And the interesting thing with internal communications and intranets is, and I always say this to people, is there's certain types of content which is suited to an intranet, which is content that is only to be consumed internally. Private, it's not for public consumption. If you're sharing news about the company that is in the public domain, where is someone more likely to see that content? Are you more likely to be on your intranet or LinkedIn? If we asked 100 people, how often do you go on LinkedIn and how often do you go on your intranet? I would doubt any company that said it's more likely that you would go on your intranet. So actually, if you're spreading news about the company that's in the public domain, it's actually a good idea to get your employees to share it on LinkedIn so other employees see it. And obviously, again, be strategic about who shares that content as well.
That's the perfect example. And thinking of times where I've seen that internally within Disseminate, I know for a fact that he won't mind me naming him Craig, one of our somebody in our sales team spends so much time on LinkedIn. I know that if I post something on LinkedIn, he's going to see it there before he sees it within. So we use Disseminate for our internal comms too. He's 100% going to see it within LinkedIn before he sees it within Disseminate the platform, because he might go in there once, twice a day to find content to share, but spending all of his time on LinkedIn, I know where he's going to see it first. So you're absolutely right. I don't want to speak for all organizations, but I think they're more likely, employees are more likely to open LinkedIn versus their internal comms platform.
Yeah. And the thing is about earned media value, it's an indication. So it gives you a yardstick almost to say, well, this is kind of worth this. I think, and I was doing a training session the other day with one of our sales team on reporting, and she was asking about, you know, is it like for like? And the answer is no, it's not. Because if you buy media from one place or another place and different time of month, different day, if I'm targeting, blue collar organizations, it's not going to compare to, if it's primarily like a software company, as an example. So it's an indicator, but ultimately what we're looking at is what does this drive at the end of it? So yeah, I mean, I think oversimplifying it is a bad idea, but also thinking it all of the data is equal is also not something I would recommend.
Would you say as well, I know this is something that you touched on in your LinkedIn comment, but you and I had a conversation about it and we kind of built on this a little bit, but would you say measuring ROI from clicks is more accurate because of the fact that employees, while they might be likely to engage with a post that they see on LinkedIn, they might like it, comment, reshare, they're less likely to click on them. So is it better to look at clicks, you think, for if you want that hard figure for your ROI, your earned media value?
Yeah, assuming that the content is clickable content, mm-hmm. then I would say yes. Also, your own reporting, not on the advocacy side, but inside your own reporting inside your website, I would assume you would have removed employee traffic. So that would help anyway. But yes, I would say click traffic would be a better way to do it. And also, a lot of people like and engage in content, and often the amount of likes and engagement is less than the clicks, which means there's a lot of people liking and commenting on content they didn't read. But that we know that anyway. But yeah, so I would say the closer you can get to the shopping basket, almost, the closer the data is going to be real.
Okay, so to summarize, I think the biggest takeaway from this has to be, if you're running an employee advocacy program, don't measure success just by one metric. Have a North Star metric, but try not to focus too much on, you know, just engagements on social or just clicks. Try and look at the wider impact. So to give you an example, at Disseminate, we use self-reported attribution on all of our inbound inquiries. So people can tell us how they heard about us. And you might have heard this on a previous episode, but they can write whatever they want. And 9 times out of 10, the majority of people will say, we heard about you on LinkedIn. I mean, we get some weird ones as well. Like somebody said the other day, they heard about us on the internet, which was as vague as you can be. But 9 times out of 10, they'll say LinkedIn, or I follow Bradley or Jody, our VP of marketing, whatever it might be. And that to us is our North Star metric. So yes, we look at the click data. We want to know that the content is resonating. So we will look at likes on social and comments. We want to know that it's starting conversations, but have multiple ways of measuring success, and don't fixate too much on things like likes and impressions. But if you absolutely have to, use that Disseminate data that we put together to filter out that the average percent of employees who are going to engage with your content. But yeah, that's where I'd like to kind of finish that. I would say if you haven't done so already, then do sign up for the course, and absolutely join that LinkedIn group, because like I said, this is where this discussion came from. It's been a talking point within the company, between me and Brad, and most importantly within that group. So if you want to get involved, then sign up for the course and get yourself access to that group. And we want to hear from you. We want to hear your stories, and we want to hear your hot takes. But otherwise, thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you in 2 weeks' time.